Boo!
Did I scare you?
Your presence scares me.
It says the man who last night wore a Riddler outfit around his neighborhood because it was All Hallows Eve. And who did I spend it with? I spent it with the rabbi.
Yeah, we should make this an annual thing.
It was fun hanging out with you last night, man.
It was good.
It was good. Your wife is wonderful.
Yeah.
Your daughters are amazing and so bright. Mm. I can't imagine what it's like to try to convince them to do something because they probably just they're very litigious, you know, and they know the rules, they know the laws, and they're ready to argue them.
Yeah, I don't know if my kids know the rules so much because, you know, my kids all, after I ask them 1,000 times to do something, you know, the response I get is, "Oh, sorry, Dad, I forgot. I just told you 2 seconds ago. Oh, sorry, Dad, I forgot."
So the priest and the rabbi were here on the podcast, and the good news about this podcast is not just the time that we spend here in the studio together, but we also hang out together, and we actually like each other. Mm-hmm. And my favorite memory last night is telling his daughter, "So, daughter, before you go to bed, Ellie, are you going to go read about Jesus?" She's like, "Why would I do that?" I go, "Because he was a Jew." She's like, "So?" And then the rabbi just looks at me, and he just shakes his head. He's like, "I'm sorry." And then my wife's best friend, she's like, "I like him. I like her. She's good. She's tough. She's really good." Mm-hmm. So anyways, today we're going to be talking about isolation and loneliness and why is it growing more and more, especially since the advent of the personal computer from Apple. We see the numbers from that point forward started going up. How do we respond to it as a religious community? So we'll talk about the whys. We'll even throw in the movie Frozen into the mix. What do we learn from Elsa and Anna when we talk about loneliness and isolation? And then, but we're going to kick it off first with Halloween, and which is one of the rabbi's favorite holiday.
Favorite non-Jewish holiday.
Okay, so yes, let's not. Yeah, you need to save him here. But he gets a new outfit every single year. He saves them all. And last night he looked spectacular. If we can post that on our Facebook page, A Priest and a Rabbi Podcast, a picture of him in the Riddler outfit. But why is Halloween such this awesome response to the loneliness that we might be experiencing in America? Halloween just pushes against that grain completely and really breaks a lot of American norms. Mm-hmm. So we got to experience that last night together. So are you ready? Are you ready for that, buddy?
I'm ready.
Okay. Did your daughter? What's the over under of your daughter actually reading about Jesus before the end of the year?
I think she glanced over it.
I bet she will before the end of the year. You know why? Christmas.
We have Hanukkah, which this year does coincide around Christmas time. So it's they're excited for it.
Could I playfully at some point get her like a children's book about Jesus? Or would you and your wife find that like offensive? I'm not trying to convert her. I just want to play this game with her. Okay, no.
Give it a go.
So, all right. Well, God bless you all. We thank you so much for tuning into this podcast. And please share it with those who enjoy listening to this goofy priest and this amazing rabbi. And the topics we talk about today, we talk about loneliness and isolation and how do we respond as a religious community. God bless you. Enjoy the podcast.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the program hosts and their guests and are not necessarily those of WSTU, St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Temple Beit Haim. Products that may be mentioned are not necessarily intended as an endorsement. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited. And now, WSTU presents A Priest and a Rabbi. Call in with questions and comments at 220-9788. 220-WSTU. Now, here's your host.
Holy cow, it is A Priest and a Rabbi on a radio station / podcast. Everyone out there in this booming metropolis of Martin County / Stuart, Florida / Palm City, we are so happy that you have tuned in this morning on your way to work to go change the world. This is Father Christian Anderson here, and I'm right next to the best looking rabbi you've seen this side of the Jordan River. It is Rabbi Matthew Durbin. How are you? Good morning. What's happening?
I'm super. It's, it's the day after Halloween.
Uh-huh.
So, just to say, you know, we had an amazing time last night.
We sure did.
Just to say the interfaith dialogue goes well beyond the lines of Friday morning radio program and throughout the week to prep for it.
Absolutely.
So just for our listeners, who are not aware, So last night, I had mentioned to Father Anderson a few days ago, you know, we're going to do trick-or-treating with my kids. And, you know, if you and your wife and, you know, the Father Anderson's wife has her best friend in from out of town from New Jersey. So she came last night with her 2-year-old son.
Yes, sir.
And came over last night, and we had a great time trick-or-treating, and it's just a lot of fun. I keep forgetting how hot and humid it still is on October 31st, thinking it would be nice and cool, and it was swelteringly hot?
Sweltering hot, but then it didn't help that you were wearing the Riddler outfit, full suit.
Full suit.
You were going like almost three-piece style Riddler outfit with question marks all over the place. It was smashing. It was fantastic. But you were buttoned up with the bow tie as well. So you were sweating. You know what? I mean, it was.
It was a little difficult this morning to get up. My kids were fast asleep. Still 7 o'clock in the morning. Got up in a panic. You know, got them ready. Rushed them to school. And of course, they dismissed tardies this morning. And a part of me said, oh, had I known that, I would have slept in for an extra hour. Of course, the school said, no, you have 20 more minutes before we mark you as late, which is fine. And as I'm driving in this morning, I thought to myself, you know, we have this whole daylight savings time coming in on Saturday night, right? 2 a.m., we change back the clocks. Why can't we just change back the clocks November 1st? Why don't we just do it October 31st, 2 a.m., that way, we all know what happens the day after Halloween, right? Most of our kids get sick. They get sick from eating too much candy. They're tired. You know, why not just give that extra hour of sleep now? Why do I have to wait till Saturday night?
Something with the Gregorian calendar. I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming it has something.
But why not? Why not?
What about you? What are your thoughts on moving Halloween and trick-or-treating to the last Saturday of October?
See, this is why he's our producer.
Last Saturday of October. Okay.
There was a petition, but Congress isn't going to act on it. I think it was on change.org or whatever the website is. A lot of people would like to do it, and I was against it. And then I realized, no, adults already celebrate Halloween on the last Saturday of the month, so you can sleep in on Sunday.
Interesting.
Now you got to make kids get up and go to school.
Interesting.
This is true. I was in the nightclub world.
But
yeah, you do the Halloween on a weekend.
But if you put on Halloween on October 25th, it just doesn't have the same meaning as October 31st. Granted, the date just seems to be arbitrary, but I don't know. I just it's such an interesting like way to go about it. That, you know, so I was talking with my mom yesterday, and this is kind of interesting. So she was saying, you know, it was really cold in Toronto, and it was raining, and it was the first time that my mom could remember that she said we had very little, if any, kids. And you know, we live in a very populous area where there's a lot of children that do trick or treating. And she said last night, you know, she goes, "I got 4 bags of candy. I don't even know what to do with it. I had maybe 3 or 4 trick or treaters." And she said, "You know, we at least did okay because the city of Montreal decided because it was too cold and the weather was not conducive that they canceled Halloween and will." Do the trick-or-treating tonight as opposed to last night. And I just thought to myself, it just doesn't feel the same. It just doesn't feel the same if you do it on November 1st.
I think that's personal. I think that's for you, buddy. That's for you. This might be a Matthew Durbin thing. Yeah. But I did enjoy walking around your neighborhood last night in the dark looking for you and shouting, "Where's my rabbi?" Yeah. Rabbi, because your community, your neighborhood was pumping with people all over the place. Someone actually set up a haunted house.
Yeah.
People, there's
good.
Your neighborhood got really into it. And so today's theme of the show is really about loneliness and isolation. And it was a really good lead-in last night of walking around in a community and saying, you and I were reflecting on what other holiday, what other time of the year, not even Christmas, not Thanksgiving, where you can walk around a community, your neighborhood, and this holiday, it expects that you engage actually with your neighbors. Like, it puts everyone into the streets, and it gives you this permission, which now in the 21st century in America, to go up to someone's door and knock, and someone's actually going to answer without thinking you're nuts, or in Florida, grabbing your pistol. So it's like, it's this really cool thing that everyone's just in the streets saying hello to each other, talking about their outfits, and it engages the community. And that's, is that really the only holiday you and I were thinking about that that allows for that? And so this is a great lead-in for today's show, because we're talking about why is America becoming more lonely and more isolated. This has been a discernment for sociologists and anthropologists here in the States for a while. The most famous book was like Bowling Alone in 2000. But so we're going to talk about that and flesh that out from a theological perspective too. But so yeah, is there any other holiday that has that?
Like you said, I mean, it's so interesting that you either as an adult or as a child can knock on somebody's door, seemingly almost enter into their house or look around their house, and it's fun, and there's no challenge with it. You know, even last night as we were walking down my street, and you see neighbors who normally would never truly really interact together, sitting outside in chairs and you know, having food and just reveling together. I mean, it's such an amazing thing, and it's not a developmental thing that it's only for developments or communities, but everyone comes together, and it's just, I don't know, it's remarkable.
Yeah, you know, it'd be interesting to see what neighborhoods don't do that and why. Why is it? Is it yours because yours is a gated community, so there's people feel more secure, more safe? Because we talked about this before that it is. If someone rings our door personally any other day of the week, so 364 days, someone rings the doorbell, the first thing is like, who's ringing the doorbell? Mm-hmm. Why are they ringing the doorbell? What's mm-hmm. going on here? And then you look through the peephole. You don't just go open the door, right? And it's not like we live in an unsafe area. But I remember back in the day when I was a kid, if the doorbell rang, it was exciting. That meant like maybe you could go play. That could be a neighbor. That could be a friend. It was exciting. The doorbell rang. But now when the doorbell rings, it's like, who's that? Mm-hmm. Unless you know, because usually your friends will text you outside and be like, hey, I'm at your door, right? So if you didn't get the text message or the phone call, you kind of get really weirded out. Mm-hmm. You're like, someone rang our doorbell the other day, and I looked outside and recognized the guy. Mm-hmm. And you know, I just got out of the shower, so I wasn't decent. I was like, I'm not answering the door. I don't know who this dude is. It's unfortunate that the worry and fear or concern is the first thing that goes off, as opposed to excitement of like engagement and community. Oh wow, who's this guy? I don't, you know, outside our door.
No, I mean, you're right. I mean, it is. You know, I think as a kid, it's that excitement, as you said, of, you know, what's behind the door. Whereas today, I think we're apprehensive a little bit and say, well, what's the purpose? Why are you here?
Why would you knock on my door?
Why would you knock on my door? As opposed to Halloween that just says it gives permission.
Yes. And like you and I went up to someone's house last night where they were in the front driveway. They had many neighbors over just chilling out. They brought out the chairs. It was dark. You couldn't see anything, but they were still out there talking. The lady had spent all day making Jello shots for the adults. Mm-hmm. There was candy all over for the kids. And then we were allowed freely to walk into their portico, mm-hmm. walk around, hang out with the skeletons. Without them there, looking into their house, mm-hmm. you couldn't do that any other day of the year.
No, you do that any day of the year, and the sheriff's office comes banging
on
your door.
Well, in the state of Florida, you also, you know, there's a law that allows them to shoot at you if they feel threatened by you on their property. So it's awesome. I mean, so the Halloween does become, I think that bumps Halloween up into some of the top holiday of in America. Just for that alone, especially for religious dudes like you and I, who part of our job is to really build community and to be walking around and no one's afraid to say hello, to engage, to talk, and it gets people out of their homes into the streets. And it's an awesome celebration. Mm-hmm. It really is. So kudos to Halloween. And you know, real quickly, as we go a little deeper into this idea of like the adverse of this, which is isolation and loneliness, and why is it increasing in the States? A little background, you know, from a Christian perspective, we have this thing called at least from a like an Anglican, Catholic, Episcopal tradition of the Triduum. This is a three course meal we got here, where Halloween is All Hallows' Eve, and then followed by All Saints' Day that happens on Sunday, and then All Souls' Day, which follows afterwards. So All Souls' Day is sort of the Anglican way of recognizing that Catholic thing of purgatory, which we don't believe in. But it's a way of still recognizing the dead and the day where the space between heaven and hell becomes a little thinner. This day of Halloween, Hallows' Eve, actually is one of the days where the church was incorporating a pagan holiday of the death, you know. So that day was actually called Samhain. It was a pagan Celtic celebration and in the beginning of the winter. So the idea that you would build bonfires because it's a day where the death comes home a little bit, those who are dead, and you build the bonfires to scare away the evil spirits, right? So when the church came in, they got really creative and created you know, this All Hallows Eve to celebrate the dead, those who are dead, and to lift them up. So, but now it's grown into something much more than that. And Día de los Muertos in Mexico has their own way. Mm-hmm. And it's around winter because winter is the coming of death. The harvest, you pull in the last harvest, you're going to store the food up. You're reminded of your mortality as well. You know, as winter comes in, we're all reminded of our mortality, I guess. So the church has... The church tries to hold on to that, you know, from a Christian perspective. This is a time when we're remembering those who have died, those who have passed on. The whole community of saints that are around us, those who are the big names that we recognize, but also the people, just the everyday person, and we lift them up. And All Saints Day. It's a big holiday this Sunday at the church. All Saints Day, is we lift up all the saints of the church, whether those who are in heaven or here on earth, who are still walking amongst us, and we celebrate the church triumphant. And then All Souls is more about those who are dead, and that's the day following. But for you, from a Jewish perspective, you guys have a day that's very similar to Halloween from a costume perspective.
Yeah. So you know, we have a holiday, as you said, it is very similar. In terms of, you know, we dress up, we masquerade ourselves, kind of our holiday of Purim, which you know, commemorates the survival of the Jewish people by Queen Esther, who came before King Ahasuerus and effectively pleaded on the Jewish people's behalf to not be destroyed. And at the end, it was the king's main advisor, Haman, who devised this plot because one of the Jewish people, Mordechai, would not bow down to him. And he was enraged. I'm the king's advisor. I'm like the second most important person in the world. And how does this guy not bow down to me? And, you know, the whole notion that for Mordechai was, no, I don't bow down. The only person that I bend low for is God. And he was so enraged that he devised this massive plot to kill the Jews and to have them. And ultimately the story gets twisted at the end. So suddenly it's the king who realizes that it was Mordechai who saved his life. And there was no formal way of honoring him. So he goes before Haman and says, the man that I'd like to honor and to celebrate is Mordechai. And ultimately, Haman gets deposed and he gets hung himself. And, you know, it's the story of Jewish survival. It's the story that we celebrate of there was a kingdom and a man who tried to destroy the Jewish people, and we overcame it through God's help and God's grace. And
why the costumes?
Because we dress in costume to remember the event, so we'll dress like Queen Esther. We'll dress like Mordechai. Sometimes we might dress like Haman.
But you can't dress like any of the characters. You can't show up in a Frozen outfit.
Today, I think we do in terms of Purim. You know, when I was a kid, it was very story oriented. So, you know, we would dress like Queen Esther, or we would dress like.
But now you can dress like Queen Elsa.
You can dress like Anna. Elsa,
Olaf,
Meridia. Is that her
Sven.
Name from
Meridia?
Brave?
I don't know, dude. You got daughters.
Is that her name, Brave? Meridia? Yeah.
Okay,
so
cool.
Mike goes on.
So you could do that. All right. So, but when is Purim?
You know, Purim falls in the Jewish calendar and during a specific Hebrew date. In the English date, it would be generally around March.
Okay.
That we would celebrate. You know, we read the Book of Esther. Out of our biblical tradition, coming out of the Book of Writings, but it is it's a joyous time because it's effectively we overcame oppressive forces and we prevailed.
Awesome.
But you know, so it's so interesting when you look at the notion between that and Halloween, which obviously, as you said, look, Halloween is a pagan holiday. It's certainly not a Jewish holiday. But it is the time that we can really dress up. You know, Purim is also the time that we dress up and make fools of ourselves. It's the same thing with Halloween. You know, I as you mentioned, I dressed up as the Riddler. So I got this costume. I went out. And a few minutes before my wife said that she was coming home, she came home a little early so we could kind of get the shenanigans underway. So I decided to just walk out of the house in this outfit to kind of surprise her. And all I saw as my wife drived into the driveway was her face dropped, and I could see her mouthing the words, oh my goodness.
Yeah, I can see her doing that.
Right, and my kids found it hilarious, and you know, it's just a really fun time, because it is that moment where, you know, as you said, it's the adverse of isolation. It's community, it's family, it's you know, people coming together to just have a good time. It's really the only time of the year where we can, you know, seemingly leave work a little bit early. We can dress up our homes to make it festive, you know, and just, I don't know.
Invite the community to your home. Yeah. I mean, it's totally normal for everyone to be on the streets knocking on doors, and you're giving away things. You're giving away candy. You're celebrating. You get to dress up and have fun. It's a big costume party. Your whole neighborhood gets together, and you can break the fourth wall of just finally talking to everyone who walks by you. It breaks a lot of big American norms right now that we have of this isolation that we're feeling. So that, as you can see, it was a huge intro for us of why is America getting lonelier?
You know, it's always funny hearing it from a child's perspective too. So my kids were very excited. Obviously, it's, you know, that time of the year that other people, us in general, you know, buy stuff for other people. You know, not to
Christmas?
Say Christmas. No, but
birthdays.
Like, yes, but what
Thanksgiving
for strangers,
for those,
for strangers, right? Effectively, I'm buying candy for other people to enjoy. And it's just, we don't celebrate Christmas. I don't know what it is. But, you know, certainly Hanukkah, for example, you know, we buy things for other people, but those are familial. You know, I'm buying it for my kids as opposed to buying candy that is distributed to other people. It's just something about that it's just such an amazing time that we have the opportunity to do things for other people that give them joy. And I see it from my kids' perspective, because my kids will say, we got to go to that house that gives the full size candy bars.
Of course. Yeah.
Right. And I think to myself, you know, we buy the package candy, you know, it comes.
You guys
like
had
the
terrible
mini size.
Candy.
We did have terrible
candy.
Right. And not to blame my daughter on this one, but so I went on this thing last night.
You're blaming your daughter, right?
I am blaming my daughter. So I came home and I said to my wife when she came to the door, I said, look, I don't know why you'd buy the world's worst candy. You know, nobody likes Tootsie Rolls. You know, once you have one,
they pull out your molar.
So all I see is my wife kind of giving me the shh, shh thing. And I go, why? Why would you buy the world's? And she goes, it wasn't me. And my 8-year-old goes, Dad, I chose the candy.
Okay.
So then as we said that, she comes home that night, and as we walk through the door, there's candy on the entrance to my house, and she goes, wow, Dad, I guess you're right. Everyone took all the candy but the Tootsie Rolls.
Exactly.
Nobody likes those.
Yeah,
it
looks like Dookie. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. So, all right. So Dookie. America is getting lonelier. The General Social Survey recently found that the number of Americans with no close friends has tripled since 1985. Right now, zero is the most common number of confidants that people report now that they have in a recent survey.
But how much of our loneliness is also
Can I get through the stats?
No.
Can I get through the stats? This is like the fifth time you've already interrupted.
But
today.
If you look at the advent of technology, how much of our loneliness is also predicated on the fact that we have
Can I get a producer
media.
Here who allows me to speak, please? Help me.
Want me to turn the mic off?
Yes. So especially if I'm giving stats, all right? But we get interrupted every time by the rabbi. So this will help you, rabbi, in you putting your argument together and to actually listen to the stats. So they can. So the average number of people in America feel like they can talk about important matters has actually fallen from 3 to 2. So we have statistically that loneliest people saying that the amount of close friends they have has completely decreased since 1985. People who really get and understand who they are. So this is happening since 85. So sociologists are trying to figure out why. And there's probably many reasons for that. And we can always go back to the rugged individualism of America. We don't see this in a lot of other countries that express more of a groupistic mentality, where it is something like Halloween is not this weird thing that happens where, oh my gosh, the community gets together and hands out candy. That happens on the daily where people in in the streets. People are talking to their neighbors. In other countries, that is more normal, but in the States, it is not. And this research goes on to show that it's actually even worse now with millennials, but not even millennials. Millennials are not as bad as Gen Z. Mm-hmm. Of putting out a survey that the number of confidants that you have in your life is gone. I mean, to put zero. That's kind of that's depressing that you on a survey say, how many confidants do you have in your life? And you would say zero. So you can really confide in. So what's your thought? What's your first thing? Why would you think that has been on the increase?
I mean, I think social media has a lot to do with it. I think also our consumer culture has a lot to do with it. I think that, it's a very interesting stat that you said of, you know, to whom do you confide in? No one. Well, I mean, that's lonely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's sad that we don't find that we have somebody to whom we trust implicitly that we could have those private and important conversations with. I think technology is the biggest indicator and the biggest challenge to our own sense of loneliness. I don't, you know, from a social media perspective, I can have all my friends that I want, whether I know them or not, just based on cyberspace, as opposed to actually going out and actively pursuing. I think it's the same, not to equate loneliness with laziness, but I think, you know, when I was a kid, I mean, Halloween, I mean, it's cold back in the north at the end of October. I remember, you know, my parents wouldn't allow us to go sit inside and play video games. I mean, my mother would say, get outside, be active, meet new people, do things. And I think the fact that I could sit on my phone or the computer and I can access Facebook or I can access Instagram or other of these social media platforms, and suddenly that becomes my community. And I think in some way it's isolating. You're really accessing through a visual content as opposed to a physical content.
Yeah, to your point, one of these studies goes on to show that loneliness began to surge 2 years after Apple launched its first commercial personal computer. And so 5 years after the World Wide Web was created as well. So if you do have social anxiety, and you and I were talking about this the other day. One time I got invited to a nightclub. I went by myself, and I get inside the nightclub. I'm in there, and I didn't know anyone. And so I could sit in the corner and by myself and live into that whole social anxiety, or I could just take the phone out of my pocket and just stare into my phone and act like I'm really doing something there. Where maybe back in the day you get a little more creative and you try to maybe talk to someone and engage with someone, but you have to confront those fears, those social anxieties. You got to deal with it. Now you don't really have to deal with those social anxieties anymore. You kind of either you can just escape into more of a digital sphere, and mm-hmm. we all know at the end those are not going to really fulfill you. At the end of the day, they're not. If you guys have thoughts on this about why loneliness has been increasing in America over the last 15 to 20 years, give us a call here, 772-220-9788, 772-220-9788. So we jump on the internet and we can engage a bunch of people. Before it was chat rooms or wherever you want to do. But that research will show that that's not going to be fully fulfilling as well, because you were getting into the flesh and having to deal with a real person, deal with facial recognition, a body language, mm-hmm. etiquette, and all that. So we're going to get into this more in the second part of the show. How as clergy members, how do you as a rabbi respond to this, knowing that this actually, in Martin County, we've had the therapists in our congregation talk about it is they call it an epidemic, mm-hmm. especially with the elderly. They are alone. They're isolated. So the part of it is not even their choice. They're older. Maybe their kids live far away. Their spouse has died. They're up on the third floor of maybe some apartment building, and they're by themselves. And they used to have a community, which was their husband. They used to have a community, which was the whole family. If you think about it, you were part of the Greatest Generation. You had three kids. You always had people around you. The kids brought their friends over. And then all of a sudden, fast forward 7 years, you're just by yourself in a retirement area, and you're just all alone, and it's hard to even get help to help you with certain things. yes, here comes the depression and the sadness, and you have a lot of time just to think by yourself, and we all know what it's like to have that spin cycle in your head. It's something we, you know, in the church we talk about a lot. How are we responding to this need in our community, especially here in Martin County, where we do have a lot of elderly? Are we creating ministries or just caring ministries to just be with people? So are you encountering the same thing over at the temple?
Sure, absolutely.
And how are you guys responding?
Well, you know, we respond, especially with you know, the idea of isolation and loneliness. You know, we go back to our tradition. We go back to one of the sayings in our tradition of Perkei Avot, which is the ethics of our ancestors, where Rabbi Hillel, great sage of 2,000 years ago, had used the phrase and the understanding of "do not separate yourself from the community." And I think that it's such a powerful and impactful insight as to, you know, if you separate yourself from the community, you're divesting from what it means to be part of something beyond ourselves, to enjoy that camaraderie, enjoy the companionship, enjoy community in some way that is all of like-minded, right? We share the same values, or we share the same idea of being together. And I think for Hillel, it was that understanding. Do not separate yourself. And I think that's one of the phrases that when we encounter some of these great challenges of isolation and loneliness and being separate from others, of, you know, we really try to impress that upon ourselves and upon
so
others.
So for you guys, it's more of a cultural a thing that you're trying to instill, saying do not separate yourself from the community. If you might feel that at times that you want to go be a lone soldier, go off by yourself, and you're saying that's not what we do as Jews. That's not what we do at Temple Beit Chaim, right? Mm-hmm. We are a community. So everything we do, I mean, that was the theme in seminary for us. It was about community, community, community.
But it's so interesting, even when you look at, and I know that a lot of the churches do it today. I think you guys do it as well. You know, for those that may be isolated, right? Those that are infirm, those that are perhaps in hospitals or homebound and can't make it to community. What has our religious world done today? We live video stream our services so that others can be part of that community.
Sure.
Now, the flip side to that is, well, why would I go to my church or my synagogue when I can have the comforts of it sitting in my pajamas at home?
Yes, it could create the adverse part. It could create a lackadaisical community. So those who can get out actually say, why do that? I could just go grab some Lucky Charms, sit down on the couch, and watch. You know, watch the service, mm-hmm. and I feel like I got it. And we all know, you and I say, no. The body, as Christians, we say the body of Christ grows when we're all together mm-hmm. and engaging with one another. Something happens. God shows up. We're two or three or more present. I mean, he shows up when you're alone too. But there's power in that, and we need to do this as a community. But you're right. The live stream helps. But then we have ministries called Eucharistic Visitors. So these are people who are trained, who spend a lot of time in training, and then they go out after the service. And they bring the communion to those. They go to homes. They go to rehab centers, hospitals. You know, being in a hospital, talk about isolation. My gosh. I mean, especially you're in there for a couple weeks, just a lot of times by yourself. Let's say, again, the situations that you and I see a lot here in Martin County, the spouse has died, right? And your kids live in Michigan, mm-hmm. And they can't get down right now because they're busy with working their kids. And here you are in this hospital bed. This is where, in this time of loneliness and where we see more individualism in the States, where the church and the temple, religious institutions, this is our opportunity to really shine, to say, no, we're going to go visit you in the hospital.
And I think we do a really, I think as a religious community, I think we do a really good job. You know, we have a caring community in our congregation where we go off to, you know, nursing facilities, rehab centers, you know, from Port St. Lucie down to Hope Sound, North Palm Beach, and we provide the holiday, whether it be Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, or Hanukkah, or Passover. We bring the holiday to those that can't get out, and the joy that we get, because, like you said, there are some people that we visit all the time that don't have family, that don't have friends that come by on a regular basis, that they're isolated, they're alone, and they want that sense of community but can't get it. And I think as a religious institution, we provide an excellent service to them for them to know that, you know, you're not alone during this this challenging time of whatever holiday it may be, or just any time throughout the year, because it is isolating. I mean, you know, I think we all can remember or imagine times where we've been, you know, in the hospital for a certain challenge that we've had, or you know, visiting with others where the only joy that they get is knowing that somebody is coming to visit.
Absolutely. Yes, you know, absolutely. So we have so in the second part of the show, we're going to talk a little bit of like also the health effects of what it means spiritually and physically of just loneliness. And this is from Psychology Today, had a great article on this. And then we're going to bring in the movie Frozen. What does Frozen teach us about isolation and loneliness, and what can we learn from that as people of faith, and how we can be so instrumental in standing for this this beautiful, healthy thing called community that God gives us, and how do we work ourselves out of this this current epidemic? And let's just call it current, because we hopefully, as a society, we can overcome this of loneliness and isolation that's leading to a lot more depression. Suicide rates have gone up, and a lot of in Psychology Today, they'll trace it back to this this plague of loneliness and isolation. So we'll be right back here on A Priest and a Rabbi.
You're listening to A Priest and a Rabbi podcast. If you haven't done so yet, make sure to subscribe. And please leave a rating and a review, 5-star rating and a positive review if you can. We certainly appreciate it. That is the best way to make sure that others out there just like you can find this podcast. If you want to get in contact with Father Christian and Rabbi Durbin, you can do so by emailing apriestandarabbi@gmail.com. And the absolute best way to get a hold of the fellas is to call into the radio show. This podcast airs live on the radio every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on WSTU 1450. And you can listen live online at WSTU1450.com. And if you want to join the show, you can call in to 772-220-9788. That's 772-220-9788. To you.
Hey everyone, this is Father Christian here on A Priest and a Rabbi. So happy for you to be here on this podcast with us. And I want to let you know that I have started a YouTube channel called Your Favorite Christian, and you can check it out on YouTube. And every Monday, I drop a new episode, and it's always through the lens of faith, but taking on different topics such as dating, relationships, marriage, pop culture. I've done one recently where I went out to the art show and talked about how do we find our relationship with God through what all the latest artists are doing. Last week was what do women really want in a man, and interviewing different people to be a part of that. So please check that out on YouTube. Subscribe, like, share, put on the notification so you get that every Monday. I also want to let you know of this podcast wouldn't be here if it wasn't for a generous donor from St. Mary's Episcopal Church who wishes to remain anonymous. All he asked, though, was that the information gets out that St. Mary's Episcopal Church here in Stuart has a healing center. And so you can call if you're looking for a counselor, someone to be there for you during a challenging time. And you can call the church at 772-287-3244. We also have a group of Stephen ministers who have been trained over 50 hours of training to be with you and walk with you during a time of crisis. They are not counselors. They are trained just to be more of the presence of Christ and walk with you during a time of crisis, whether it's a good crisis of having, oh my gosh, my daughter's about to get married, or if there's something a little bit heavier. So give us a call, 772-287-3244, and I thank that anonymous donor who makes this all possible. All right, God bless you, and enjoy the rest of the podcast.
Welcome back, Stuart. Welcome back to A Priest
and
an Amazing Rabbi on A Priest and an Amazing Rabbi Walk into a Radio Station. We are talking today about isolation and some of the challenges associated with it, and what the converse would be in terms of forming community, and kind of looking a little bit deeper into what are some of the mitigating factors that lead towards our society or our culture becoming less engaged and more individualistic as opposed to communal.
And we during the break we brought in, we often turn to our producer Mike, who is our I think you're on the cusp of Gen Y and millennial.
Yeah, elder millennial.
So he's an elder millennial. So you know us old guys who often turn to him during these times to ask him. And we said, Mike, who's your community out here in Martin County? And Mike said,
I don't have one.
But you have one community.
So when I was younger, I played video games a lot. So back in the 2000s, when forums were a thing online, I found a forum dedicated to video games, and somehow that is still going strong, even though forums as a whole are kind of gone after Facebook. But so the only community I could really think of was an online community, people that I've never actually met in person.
Yeah, but Mike, so here's the thing: you're an outgoing guy.
Somewhat.
You're okay. Somewhat. You're an ambivert. You're likable. Yeah. You know, good looking dude. And you would think that a guy like you would have community coming out the ears. You're young.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have kids yet.
No.
But you have a lovely wife. And
I do.
But right now you're saying your lovely wife is really your community. So
for
how
sure.
do you explain as a young strapping man the reason? Or do you prefer just to be just with your wife and not really kind of
yeah.
getting?
It is a preference. Like if I'm sitting there and thinking, all right, what do I want to do tonight? Oftentimes, now I go out and I get a lot of interaction by doing this show and doing things that I do trivia in the evenings and things like that. So I'm out seeing people face to face. I wouldn't consider it a community. So when I'm sitting there thinking, what do I want to do with my free time? Oftentimes it's sit at home and be with my wife and actually
and you
get
prefer
a chance
that.
To spend
You're
time.
Not missing a big community to be part of. Like, I wish we had, honey, a group of six friends and
right.
we're like in the sitcom Friends. We all get together and talk about nothing,
Every once in a while you get that little drum of feelings that bubble up and you go, I kind of wish I had something to go do. And then you go and do it and spend time with people and I'm like, okay, I'm good for the next 6 months. I don't need to do this anymore.
Gotcha. You know, because there was in the New Yorker, they had an article about a guy who was, he's a writer there and for the New Yorker, and he says, in New York, you can get incredibly isolated and lonely there, even though it's this big, hustling and bustling metropolis. And he felt that, how he did not have any confidants, but he really wanted confidants. He had some people he kind of knew, and you see, hello, but someone you could really open up to and really be transparent with. That's huge. So he got very intentional about creating communities through meetup.com or through other things, or trying to get people. So he joined this thing called Nerd Collection, and it was just a bunch of nerds who like to get together and talk about nerdy things. But when they get there and they have their community to be doing things to really kind of get to know each other, to build trust, to build it so they can have. Now he says, after a year of being a part of that, he's got some close friends who have the same values who can really, it's not just a bunch of people you get together once a week or once a month and just talk, but really start to form some connection. And he talks about how just his own psychological health. Has improved.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a huge city where if you're walking around amongst millions of people and you don't know anyone, I mean that can feel very lonely and very depressing.
Well, I think the world in general is smaller now than it was before. I mean, look, we've all got our smartphones out on the table here. We could in 2 seconds text people and call people and go on Facebook and find people we went to school with and find anybody we want. Mm-hmm. And yet, even though the means of communication have made it easier than ever, we're lonelier than ever based on these points or based on the stats.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just so lucky that in Los Angeles, when I was out there, that there was a group of people from Chicago that I knew that I could just immediately, we got together all the time. We hung out and support each other during, the acting world goes up and down. You're doing that solo, man. Yeah. That you could see why people go into spin cycle, drugs, everything. But if you got a close group of friends who are there for you to hug you, to be there with you, it's huge. But if you don't have that, you have to really work at it. I mean, you have to, you can't just sit there and loneliness becomes it just builds like a snowball. See, I'm building into Frozen. It just gets bigger and bigger.
But I think also, I think that we also have to be aware that there is a difference between finding time for ourselves and to do things that we appreciate and that we want to do in isolation, right? Self-care, whatever it may be, and living perpetually in this moment of isolation. So I say this watching, it was kind of fortuitous last night. After I put my kids to bed and put on the TV for, I just happened to go onto the channel, and it was the movie Knocked Up. Now, I don't know if you remember.
Absolutely.
Paul Rudd and Seth Rogen. And there's this... There's
all
this,
priests
there's
watch
this,
that movie.
There's this time where Paul Rudd's wife in the movie is suspecting her husband of cheating on him, on her, and so they follow him because he says he's doing work late at night to go interview a band, and turns out he's actually doing a fantasy baseball league, and they go in, and you know, she catches him in the act of this fantasy baseball league with all these guys, and she says, you know, what are you doing? You've lied to me. And the conversation that ensues after is, you know, there are things that I want to do for myself. And she says at the end, you know, well, what were you doing last Wednesday night when you said you were going to go see a band? He said, well, I went to go see a movie. Oh, who'd you go with? I went by myself. What movie? Spider-Man 3. And she goes, I like Spider-Man. Why didn't you invite me? And I think, and he says, well, there are times where I just needed that break from you, the kids, this and the other. And a part of me that says, that's real life. I mean, there are times where we have those external challenges where we say, I just need that breathing space and that time to really be by myself. And I think I think that there is a difference between finding that personal time for ourselves and living constantly in isolation. Right. And I think it's the interesting segue to, you know, the movie Frozen, which, you know, hopefully in a couple of weeks we'll be introduced to Frozen 2.
But yeah, it's premiering in China. Like soon. I guess that's where you do the big test. You know, you do it. Yeah, yeah. The trailer's already 1. Out.
1.3 billion people.
And they love anime. They love cartoons. Yeah, go for it.
But it's interesting given, and I know when we talked about this the other day, of, you know, of that movie Frozen, which is actually really interesting, that Elsa herself isolates herself from the community for fear of what her abilities will be able to do to others, that she's fearful. And of course, her sister is really concerned for her and tries, you know, becomes the heroine in this, that, and the other of trying to really help her through her challenges.
Well, yes. And so I think the question, I thought you were on a rampage there. I thought you were really about to bring home a big point.
I mean, look, one who's seen the movie probably 100,000 times. You know, I have young kids.
No, that movie is a feast for preachers, as we all know. There's so much to preach on in there. But yeah, we recently actually preached. We actually did a Frozen service at St. Mary's, and the big reason was we're celebrating the community, the beloved community of God, and how Elsa is not the best example for us. That the song "Let It Go" is actually not the song that you want to follow. I mean, it's a great song. We all love it. But really, the lyrics itself is, you know, there's no rules for me. There's no right or wrong. It's sort of like moral relativism at its finest. And I can go do whatever I want to do. And I'm all by myself. And now I'm finally free to be myself, but only by myself. And from a Christian perspective, we look at it that this is, you know, Disney courting the Christian vote here, that they have this character, Anna, who will fight through anything to be with her and risk her life and ultimately give her life to get that Jesus narrative in there for her sister finally to be freed by a true act of love. But yes, that this idea that, to your point before, there are times in our life when you do have to go to the movie by yourself. You do have to go and go let it go. But ultimately, Elsa's issue is that she's willing to stay out there in her fears and be controlled by her fears. And a lot of times we isolate ourselves because of our fears. You know, as we talked about this yesterday, as young men, when we first started like get interested in women, that you had to confront your fears to go across the room and talk to that girl. But if you didn't, you're just going to isolate yourself and be in the corner and maybe not be able to meet any girls. But you do have to confront the fears at a certain point. And when you do, and maybe you do finally get a base hit and the girl says, hi, how are you? And you do get to actually talk. It's amazing, right? And if you go down in flames, you learn something. But it's a part of isolation. It's because we're locked into our fears. We put ourselves in that ice castle. And hopefully God brings us someone like an Anna who is going to be a good friend or just someone we meet who's willing to say, you know what, I'm not going to allow you to isolate yourself. And you pray that we all can be that. We can all be honest for someone else, that we can look at someone in our life right now who's kind of being an Elsa, who's just because of out of fears, concerns, anxieties, and maybe they're not going to tell you about them. Maybe they're going to have a defense up and they're like, no, I'm fine. I'm totally fine. But you know, my gosh, they need a good friend. They need someone to reach out to them. And maybe they have a lot of surface friends, but someone to say, hey, are you okay? Are you there? And I think that's what we're missing a lot today in our communities. So you might have a lot of people that you know, quote unquote, but how many people, like a confidant, that you can really say, I'm going through some serious stuff right now.
And take the time to actually empathize and listen. I think so often we use words like, hey, how are you okay, with the intent in our minds of the person coming back and saying, I'm fine.
Yeah.
You know, things are great.
Yeah.
Because how often when somebody says, well, actually, let me tell you.
You would run.
And you're like, oh,
Come on. Come on, bro.
I don't have the time for this.
I didn't really mean it. Come on. Yeah, I had a friend of mine. She would always say, how's your heart? Right? How's your heart? And I sometimes just roll my eyes, but come on, man, what the heck does that mean? But I think she's a pretty down to earth gal, and I think she really just wanted to know. I don't care about this platitudes. I want to know really what's going on inside of you. And I think we need more of that. Mm-hmm. You know, we need more of that. And trust is a big part of that too. Is that can we be trustworthy people that if you do try to be an Anna in someone's life, that they will take you up on it because they trust you.
Mm-hmm.
In the church, we see that a lot. We have to always instill this. To be a confidant, you need to be someone that someone can be confident in trusting you.
Mm-hmm.
And if they tell you something, that's between the two of you, right? And we all know in any kind of community, especially religious communities, that gossip happens. But you build so much social capital and pastoral capital if you're a person who someone says, you know, when I talk to Matthew, that's lock and key. Mm-hmm. That doesn't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And for us all to become like that for one another. So because that when someone's in a place where they really need someone to talk to, yeah, they're going to think of you because A, they can trust you and they know you're going to listen.
Mm-hmm.
You really do care. You're really going to listen.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, perhaps today's show is not really about how do we change this loneliness and isolation thing, but then how do we become the people that, how can we be part of the solution?
But I think also too, it's also the notion of, I think that there are times that we need to be able to recognize and to understand that I need help. And I think you know, in whatever you know idea that means in terms of help, in terms of I want somebody to listen, I want somebody to hear me, I want somebody to really truly be present. And I think sometimes, you know, when we say I need help or I'm craving this, that for some it may seem as a sign of weakness. And it's not weakness. And I think it takes a big person to be able to say, I need you to listen.
Yes.
And I need help in some way. It's not it's showing our vulnerability, which I think is important. That you know, and I think with, like you said, with trust, which doesn't happen overnight, that it takes time to form those relationships, to be able to say, you know, I'm listening, I'm here.
I think one of the best communities that I try to learn from as a person in the church, and I've always been inspired by, is the 12-step community, where you can go and really honesty and vulnerability is just the hallmark. If you don't have that walking in the door, you're not going to get sober, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just that just honesty about who you are, and you walk in there and you just say, hi, you know, my name is John and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, John. We just start right from there. Let's just get everything on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And in the church, we don't often, it's like we could start each service by saying, hi, my name is Christian and I'm a sinner, right? I'm a broken person who's done some pretty screwed up things, but I'm trying to get better. And through the power of Jesus, I'm healed and blah, 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 blah. But you got to start there. And a lot of times at churches, and I don't know if you experience this in the synagogue, that there is a little bit of pressure to come and bring your Sunday best, to come and bring your church best. So you look good. You look, everything's great. And you know, the pastor looks great. And he or she looks like they got this great life. And then let's put this pressure on you that I got to look perfect, right? And then that doesn't create, I think, community, because everyone's kind of being surface, as opposed to if the leadership and everyone in church feels a comfortability just to be honest and who themselves and just come in broken and be transparent and say, I got issues, but I got this community that's here to listen and they're going to accept me. Hopefully that breaks down these walls of isolation. It would be very sad if I learned from our congregation there's people who come to church, to St. Mary's, and walk out feeling just as lonely.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there's this community here we're trying to build, and we do all these great things together, but still, there's a lot of people in our congregation who feel incredibly lonely.
But that'd be tough. I definitely can hear and see what you're saying. But even if you take that as an example, they've still invested themselves in community, right? So if I'm a parishioner in your church, and I come to your services, and then I leave just as lonely as I entered in, at least for that moment, I'm still part of community.
Yeah, you're doing what you need to do as Elsa, but then we're not being Anna's by just being open and honest. Say, just talk to me. I'm here for you.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to the movie, to Frozen, Elsa would have really helped her situation if she would have, at the beginning, before she went off to the ice castle, spoke through the door to Anna and say, Anna, I'm sorry, I got a problem, and I don't want to freeze you to death. Mm-hmm. But she doesn't. She just ignores her. And so the person who's feeling isolated and lonely it needs to step up too. But then we all need to be honest to one another and say, I'm here. I'm knocking at the door. You had a beautiful image from the movie that you were talking about during break. You want to share that?
So just the notion that both Elsa and Anna, as she realizes her frozen powers, they sit back to back, in between rooms. You know, Elsa obviously in her room, but her back is towards the door, and then Anna's back is towards the door, almost as if they are almost pressed one to one, back to back, showing that connection of familial community, but then being isolated by those walls of the door, and one really trying to experience and trying to be close to the other by saying, "I need you." And the other trying to detract and say, I can't be present with you, yeah, for I'm fearful.
So the rabbi and I can impress upon you, if you're listening here, that, and of course, if you're just tuning into the show, you can always catch it on the podcast. Just Google a priest and a rabbi. This idea of who is the Elsa in your life right now, the person who is maybe feeling a bit isolated, feel lonely, whether it's a family member, a friend, someone in your community, that you can be the Anna, that you can be the person to knock on the door and check in with them, and begin the relationship with. And if you're feeling more like the Elsa, like you're feeling isolated itself, what's a step that you can take today to really open yourself up to be more present in a community that you're a part of? And, you know, if there's a faith community for you to be a part of as well, for you to maybe be a person where, if you're the Elsa, how do you become the Anna? How do you go out and join, whether it's a caring ministry or something where you're the one visiting people in hospitals, you're going out into the community so you can kind of reverse the energy, because it's contagious. That loneliness is contagious. There's the Psychology Today article about that, how it's contagious. It leads to more and more loneliness, and it actually spreads to others because they become more lonely because you're acting lonely. So, but reverse that. How do you go and be the person who is the one who's visiting others, visiting shut-ins, serving your community? Because that's going to really change, just from a biochemical perspective, a lot of chemicals inside of your body that's, you know, leads to more sadness and depression. Live into that change. So this has been an awesome show that for us to answer. And, you know, if it's so get out there, be the Elsa, be the Anna. And can I do a shameless plug, my friend? So I'm asking for your community and your support. If you're here in Martin County, I do a one-man show called Jesus Was Not a Doorman. It's about my experience of going from the nightclub and being an actor in Hollywood to being an Episcopal priest. It's at Starstruck Theater. That is this Sunday at 6 p.m. You can go on Starstruck Theater's website, starstruckfl.com, and buy your tickets. And I would love to have you. It's 60 minutes. I play 27 characters. It's about temptation, about following our call in life, about where all, you know, the priest and the rabbi, we're sitting here wishing you a beautiful community, love on those around you, especially, you know, those who are feeling isolated and feeling lonely. We all have a responsibility. Let's go out and do it, because that's where the joy is. Peace.